Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Shout out to everyone that is watching this on YouTube. Salute to the Cutters and Roamers. This is your present from us to you as we grind in this holiday season. Hopefully everyone was able to enjoy the holidays. I know it's not always the best, so if it was not the best, I hope you're able to find that light and that gratitude and make sure that you know that you're loved and understood and respected and important. And if you had a great time, I hope you had a great time, were able to enjoy family, friends, whoever brings that light to your life. We are going to attempt to bring that light to you today by recapping some games. So Nikias, and salute to Nikias. Yes. Everyone just real quick, give a quick nod to Nikias, showing us a little bit of the opulence, the scenes. live from, you know, undisclosed location. I won't put all your business out there, but you see the vibes real quick. Gave us the little mini fro for the new year. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's time. Yeet.
This man said yeet. All right. The mini fro simply means I had to scramble to find a barber over the weekend. And so I was like, you know what? Just give me the line. So like when I get to like one of the regular bar, I can actually get like the full cut, etc.
The load management cut?
This is the load management. Okay, I can't go to undisclosed location, scraggly, undisclosed location. By the time you see this, I'll literally be gone. in Miami was at Heat Sixers last night. We're going to have some fun talking about that one. But happy holidays to everyone watching / listening. Not going to rehash everything Steve said. He said a lot better than I did. But let's talk about some basketball games. Oh, let's hoop it up.
Quick, because we are coming off a huge holiday hoop slate. Five massive contests, a lot of debate, a lot of conversation, and I'm ready to dig into the most important things. Mo Bamba, 18 points off the bench. Chimezi Metu, 23 points and 19 rebounds and 34 minutes off the bench. This is what the Christmas Day slate is all about.
Correct. And no other podcast is here to talk about you in earnest about Chimezi Metu and Mo Bamba, which Mo Bamba was a little bit everywhere in that Miami game. Again, we'll get to it. You know, hitting threes, crashing offensive glass, blocking some shots. Hey, he was doing the thing. It was cool to get the Mo Bamba game in a day that Joel Embiid did not participate. So that was a lot of fun. Either way, let's just go 1-5. We'll start at the beginning of the slate. We got Bucks-Knicks to kick us off. A 129-122 victory for the New York Knicks. Jalen Brunson with 38 points. He had 20 of those in the first half. RJ Barrett with 21-6. I think he had 14 in the first quarter. Set the tone early with his transition drives. Julius Randle with 24-9. Emmanuel quickly with 20 points off the bench. Had some crucial buckets in that fourth. As Milwaukee was trying to get a run together. On the Bucks side, 32-13 for Giannis. Also tossed in 6 assists, a steal, and a couple of blocks. Damian Lillard, after a very cold start and overall didn't shoot well from three, he did finish with 32 points and 8 assists. 24 for Chris Middleton and 12-9 off the bench for Bobby Portis. For our first Christmas game of the day, Steve, was there a major theme that popped for you?
Theme? My mind goes, because this is like the fourth or fifth time these teams have played this season. So this was the game I was actually excited to really dive into, because there's going to be an element of adjustments. And actually, they had just played Saturday. And the Bucks had once again been like, hey, no, you guys can't beat us. We're going to hurt your feelings. Take this and run with it. My mind went to the Knicks making adjustments. And I go back to the start of the game where I think the Bucks' first possession, they just go pick and roll. Hartenstein's at the level, two on the ball, pocket pass, late rotation, throw a lob. Oh, we're doing this again. I just watched this on Saturday. All right, man. That's when you start to look at like the garbage bags or the cinnamon rolls. And it's like, all right, dog.
Not the cinnamon rolls.
whatever you get down with, you take a second look at it. But I think the way that the Knicks opened up was so key and so important. The Bucks had, especially against New York, shown aggression against the Knicks movement. And movement is important to this Knicks offense. You know, we're going to talk about Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle. But the key for them is being able to find some tempo, find some flow, play out of the play. And Milwaukee had been physical and had the combination of, okay, we have this drop defense that can protect the paint. We can mix in some activity with Bobby Portis at the level. We have weak side help. We can just kind of bog you down. But I thought the way the Knicks opened up was really important to where, okay, you defended our first set. We run a counter. to begin an elbow flash, and now Dante's getting a back cut against denial. We run stack or Spain pick and roll with Brooke in a drop just to give him a little second of, hey, I need to navigate this for 2 seconds, as opposed to what we saw on Saturday where I'm here. If you get to me, I'm going to block the shot. If you drive on someone else, my man's here, I'm going to block the shot. Jalen Brunson's able to find the space, hesitate, and finish. Julius Randle kind of pushes in transition, drives hard, tries to dunk the rim off the basket. He missed.
Yes.
But that set the tone. And as you stated, the Knicks end up scoring 72 points in the paint. And I thought that the Knicks were able to really find their way. I thought Jalen Brunson really, really, really set the tone. Like, one of his big improvements has been the pull-up three. His first three was, what, a minute 30 left in the second quarter? And he just did a great job of working the space against Brooke in the drop, making sure to get paint touches, and also testing Milwaukee's, I guess, I don't want to say point of attack defense, but their screen navigation. Hey, okay, you're going to be physical. I know I have this space. You're going to have to fight over. I may not let you get back in front. If you get back in front, I may shift. I may hit you when you get back in front, and now I'm finishing. So he was able to lead the dance that way. On the other end of the floor, I thought the Knicks' defense found their rhythm to a degree. It wasn't the most perfect performance, but again, this is a Bucks team that had just really been shooting the ball against them every single time and getting whatever they wanted. You know, we talked about it on our last pod about the three-point shooting that the Bucks had. Then you mix in, oh, yeah, Giannis can just drive. Oh, yeah, Dame is now just driving. Chris Middleton is mixing in pull-ups. The Bucks are kind of getting whatever they want in this matchup. And we saw the Knicks make the adjustment of, instead of putting two on the ball automatically, Isaiah Hartenstein, who got in early foul trouble in their last matchup, hey, let's mix in a switch. Sure, Giannis, I'll switch against you. That's fine. Hey, Damian Lillard, nice reject you got there. I'm going to run as fast as I can and try and contest this at the rim. And I think that element helped bog the Bucks down to a degree. Mm-hmm. And it's less like, hey, the Bucks can't do this, and more of a, oh, y'all are doing this today. And sometimes that happens in basketball, where it's not necessarily an indictment on your offense or your flow. You can just get caught off guard, you know, especially if you just played a team and you know it's two on the ball, so, okay, pocket pass, easy read. Or, you know, they're dropping back, this is an easy read. You take those two dribbles, you're expecting that pass, oh, it's a late switch. Oh, no, I've now hit my pull-up animation.
Now you got to hope you got the bailout bad, because yeah, otherwise it's just being bobbled.
It's no good. And so I thought that that's really helped the Bucks bog down. And then I think being able to rotate a little bit better, close out the shooters better, keep the ball in front a little bit better. Their help felt better in this one, to where it just wasn't just an automatic for me. So what were some of the takeaways for you?
I'd say very quickly on the Isaiah Hartenstein front, going back to the game that was played on Saturday, I got a good chuckle out of, I was watching the pregame show. We had a watch party for this one. We're watching the pregame show, and I think it was Stephanie Reddy that asked Dennis Scott, like, hey, what are some keys for you that we should be paying attention to as we're getting ready to go to tip? They're zooming into the game. It's like, Isaiah Hartenstein, can you stay out of foul trouble? And within the first 2 minutes of that game, Isaiah Hartenstein had two fouls. It's like, well, I guess we got the answer to that one. But I think for me, and you mentioned the shooting from Milwaukee just was not there, 13 of 42 from three. So look very quickly at the box score, 31%. So they did not have that aspect going for you. I will say I appreciated Milwaukee trying to counter things. Like, as you mentioned, it felt like they were getting some automatics in their previous matchups. Like, okay, they don't want Dame to shake free. We're going to have these pocket passes. Once Milwaukee recognized that, it did seem more intentional for them to, okay, let's clear a corner. I mean, let's clear a wing here. Let's make sure we have as much space to operate as possible. So if we're not getting pure two on the ball, if y'all actually want to play this two on two, we're going to make your life miserable. I think it was a possession early in the first or midway through the first quarter, where Andre Jackson was in, he goes to the dunker spot, Pat Connaughton shifts down to the corner, you got Bobby Portis in the other corner, and it's just a high Dame Giannis pick and roll with both of those wings very clear. And it's like, ah, that's still incredibly tough to deal with. And then you factor in the injuries that the Knicks are dealing with. It's like, oh, that's still putting a lot of pressure on them. So I appreciate Milwaukee trying to find some counters, but ultimately New York was able to do enough defensively. And on the other end, One, Jalen Brunson was incredible. I already pointed out the 38 points. But the way that he read and manipulated whatever Milwaukee wanted to do defensively was incredibly fun to watch. Early in the first quarter, oh, this is just a traditional drop again. Let me just get to these floaters. Let me get to these pull-ups. Oh, the screen navigation is bad here. Let me snake this, slow down, keep you on my backside. And now I'm going to see what Brooke does. False step, cool, I'm going the other way. And watching Jalen Brunson get into the floater bag, the pull-up bag, the snake, and let me fully extend, draw this shooting foul real quick bag. And it's like, okay, what do you do when he has this kind of craft and this kind of comfort inside the arc? You get Bobby Portis in the game, cool, he's at the level, huh? Early transition possession, let me fake going left. Let me go the other way. Andre Jackson, you are now over here. Bobby Portis, you are also jumping out. And now I'm also getting downhill and I'm finishing something ridiculous at the rim. I just had a ton of fun watching Jalen Brunson. And that's kind of been, as we've talked about this Knicks-Bucks matchup, you know, ahead of the in-season tournament quarterfinals and just throughout the year, that's kind of been the fun about these matchups. Jalen Brunson against the drop primarily, but just Jalen Brunson in space. How well can he navigate it versus how well can Milwaukee keep him from getting comfortable out there? And so it was a lot of fun watching that portion of it. And then just kind of zooming out beyond the half court stuff. It was another day, and I ended up tweeting this out during the game, but it was another day in which teams just ran all over Milwaukee. And just pulling it up during the game yesterday on Clean the Glass, they track what percentage of possessions are given up in transition versus the half court, etc. Milwaukee's dead last. They bleed transition attempts. The bit was they were bleeding transition attempts, ranked 30, but in terms of points per possession allowed, they were in the top 10. And on Monday, they gave up a lot of transition opportunities and New York was able to score quite a bit. It was after makes New York was playing with some tempo, but off of misses in particular, again, RJ Barrett getting downhill very early, had 14 of his 21 in the first quarter. Julius Randle getting downhill. You already mentioned the failed dunk attempt, but Julius Randle just getting downhill. Josh Hart getting some easy ones in transition, or at the very least, putting some pressure on Milwaukee's defense. Emmanuel quickly shaking loose early on. And it just felt like, well, one, that's where it felt like a lot of the points in the paint. You mentioned 72, which is a season high for New York. A lot of it came from transition to early offense, where Milwaukee just could not get set. And I just found myself frustrated watching how it would come out. It's missed shot, look around, hey, why didn't I get that foul call? It is now a 4-on-2 on the other end. It's just like, we are in December. Like, you still have another half of season to go, a half plus of season to go. But, like, those little moments, like, just grab a body. And if you get a dead ball, say your piece to the ref if you need to. But, like, those lapses, and in addition to New York just generally playing well, spacing well in transition, making, you know, finding open players. Dante DiVincenzo also shaking fruit loose in transition as well. I just didn't love Milwaukee's transition defense in this one. And so you factor in what RJ, what Julius and Jalen Brunson in particular were able to do in the half court. You mentioned some of the cutting they were able to get to. And then they just got a whole lot of bites at the apple in transition. It didn't feel like a good defensive effort for Milwaukee. And I wasn't a big fan of that one.
You know, I'll ask you this real quick. Do you contribute that to New York having a stronger confidence as far as, hey, we're scoring a little bit, our defense is working a little bit more, let's push it a little bit more? Or is this more of an addition to, this has kind of been a bit for Milwaukee all season long, and I'd like to see it change?
I think the honest answer is yes, but I think in this one in particular, like, it felt like it was probably like 55-45, the bit with Milwaukee, and New York had more room to just push. Because normally you think about New York, you know, even going back to last season, the push unit was really the second unit. To where we get the younger guys in, we get Emmanuel quickly in particular, and now we're just going. But the half-court offense, it was more of a half-court flow with their starters. Let Julius Randle bully people, let Jalen Brunson do his thing. Mitch Robinson, when he was healthy, getting a bunch of offensive rebounds, keep things together, et cetera, et cetera. It just felt like everyone was playing with some tempo with New York in the game on Monday. So that's where it's just like, Milwaukee can't get to the point to where everyone feels comfortable pushing early because they feel like they can get some good stuff against you. Like, we have enough questions generally about what Milwaukee's point of attack defense is going to be. Andre Jackson needs more rep. Marshawn Beauchamp needs more reps, but he's been solid. Malik Beasley has been tossed on virtually everyone this season. I'm on the perimeter room. He's trying his best, but there's just a level of screen navigation, lateral quickness that he doesn't have to defend top-tier matchups. Whenever Jalen Brunson got the Dame matchup, it just felt like he got takeover. So that part wasn't particularly the one from Milwaukee either. So you got to eliminate any as much easy things as you can, I feel like, as a defense. And I don't know. New York just, it felt like they got them on their back foot for most of that game.
I guess for me, it's funny you mentioned Jalen Brunson with takeover against just Dame. I think it's just the Bucks as a concept. Yeah. Like, this man is averaging 35 against the Bucks.
That seems pretty good.
Every time you see him. But I think it was an overall team mindset. And I think what stood out to me is even there's a play, second quarter, Emmanuel quickly gets a high pick and roll. And he's seeing the space. And he's hitting the hesitation. And he's going at Brooke in a way you didn't see on Saturday. And that's where it's like, okay, this is a mindset thing. This is an important thing. And I think that, for me, was probably the biggest part thinking about the Knicks in this one. Because I think the Knicks, very quality team. Like, I know there's a lot of hashtag discussion, discourse, 1A, number, talk, all that good stuff. I think it gets lost in everything. The Knicks have gotten better offensively. Like, everyone's made their Tibbs jokes with offense and Julius Randle and Brunson and how high can you go level-wise. They're pretty good at scoring the ball. It's not always the prettiest. But their offense has felt more consistent than we've seen it in the past. And it's actually the defense that's lagging a little bit behind. I think this has been a really important stretch of basketball for the Knicks. And I think this is one of those stretches where you understand and you find out who you are as a team and what you can achieve. And so one of my bigger takeaways for the Knicks in this one was just the fact that, oh, we can make adjustments. Because you know what's funny, Nekias?
What's up?
They were only 8 of 26 from 3 in this one, which is actually worse than the 9 of 29 they shot on Saturday. And it's only their second win of the season when they make 10 or less threes. And so sometimes you just have to find a way to find how to win. What can you do to make it work? And I think in a playoff setting, a team like the Knicks, they may not come with the most overpowering A, B, and C, right? That's no disrespect. So Knicks fans, please don't do that to me. What I'm saying is, they can say, okay, we can do this to you specifically. We know you're in this. We're going to attack this drop. Or we know this is what you want to run offensively. We're going to take this away. And now you are in a different fight than you had expected. And so that's one of those things where I'm intrigued with how they handle it. Because again, they've played Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, at Utah, at Phoenix, at LA, at the Lakers, at Brooklyn. Two games is Milwaukee. You still got OKC, Orlando, Indiana, and Minnesota are your next four. So if you can survive this stretch, feeling a little bit more elevated about where you're going, now you take that success belief and you take off that way. On the contrary, or did you have any thoughts on the Knicks? Sorry.
Oh, no. You're good. I was just going to quickly remark you. You called it, man, Jalen One Brunson. That's kind of tough, but it's okay. Continue.
My fault. On the flip side with the Bucks, how did you feel about this performance? Is it a lingering issue for you with the Bucks? Because I know a lot of talk of, hey, what's up with the defense? What does the offense do? Is it just this? My thoughts in my head went to, can the Bucks find a way to elevate themselves in a night where it's not a perfect world? And it's not particularly just defensively, you know? There are going to be nights where their defense isn't very good. Their offense makes up for it. We've seen them kind of prove that part of the formula. What happens when the offense is a little bit off? Can you turn the volume up defensively to where, okay, let's sustain this part of it? Can you get your defense to a space where you can lean on it just a little bit? Offensively, do you lean on pace and tempo? Do you kind of go into execution? I feel like these are those kind of moments where you feel that, okay, what do we run? Or are we just going to, I don't want to say out talent. I think if you say out talent, that means you're not running anything or trying anything. It's more of like a quick shot thing for me with Milwaukee. When they're off, it feels like they try and swing for the fences to get their way back in it. And okay, let me take this pull up, or let me ISO go one-on-one. Let me break the set off. Or we're in transition. Hey, we have a chance to get a quick one. And now you don't. Now they are able to push on the other end. So do you have a confidence level in Milwaukee being able to, okay, can we just establish a higher base? Because we're very good offensively. We can hit certain notes defensively. We can make it really tough on you. But when we kind of get hit, can we now figure it out? I hope that makes sense.
No, I understand where you're coming from. Like, I think first, defensively, that's where I kind of appreciate, though the results haven't really been there. I think that's fair. But that's where I do kind of appreciate the experimentation we've seen from Milwaukee's defense this year. And it's important for them to get reps in different areas. Like, this was another game in which they went to the zone. Like, okay, New York's doing some things. Let's see if we can just bot them down a little bit and see if we were able to counter push from there. And so, like, I appreciate them at least attempting to find some answers there. I think from a personnel perspective, like, there does seem to be a ceiling, at least in the perimeter room right now. And I wonder, as we get ready to enter the new year in a few days and as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, do they swing for someone that they can just toss in and say, okay, we feel better about being able to switch more now because we have this guy in tow. Or we feel better about the drop if it's still going to be our base because we have this guy now versus asking Dame to do his best, Malik Beasley to do his best, Andre Jackson to do his best while staying out of foul trouble, et cetera. And so, like, I think the defense is going to be more of a personnel deal, but they are at least trying to find answers. They have been trying to find answers all year long defensively in terms of throwing different looks out there. Offensively, I think it's interesting because I think to a certain degree, you made the Dame swing so you can just out-talent, for lack of a better way to phrase it, your way out of some of these ruts. And I think we've seen that pop up with some of Milwaukee's clutch time numbers in particular. Like, okay, we probably shouldn't be in a dogfight with this team. We do have Dame, though, and we can do that. We do have Giannis. And as the year's gone on, their chemistry together has flown. And I was like, okay, we have these two that we can put in action together. Y'all have fun with this. I do wonder what the next level for them is. Like, it was interesting in this one, I think 17 offensive rebounds. Like, Pat Connaughton just came off the bench, just started flying in for extra bites at it. I don't know if that's a formula they really want to commit to in terms of, like, a team-wide, let's crash the glass because we don't have it, and let's just try to win the possession battle that way, especially in light of what their transition defense has been like this year. So I don't even know if they can afford to press that button. So I do think it is going to be on them to kind of establish a higher base in the half court, which, again, that may factor into why we haven't seen Adrian Griffin say we're going to run 60 Dame Giannis pick and rolls every game. Like, that's probably part of the calculus as to why there was a spammed early on, because they do want to establish, okay, this is what we can get to. This can be option B. This can be option C. And if all else fails, we know we can just say, Giannis, put your head down. Dame, put your head down. Or those two in action together. So I guess my overarching view is, like, they are trying to establish these bases on both ends. Again, I think there may be a move that needs to be made to just beef up the defensive floor for them. But I'm not in, like, red flag mode with Milwaukee yet, I guess, to answer your question.
No, I mean, it's fair. It's a delicate balance as to where you're trying to establish who you are, what you're very good at. You look at the high ceiling players they have, that complicates things a little bit, comes a little bit of expectations. I think it would be a disservice to the team to just spam that action. As much as people like to see it, as much as it can put pressure on teams, you also put yourself in a position where there's more film on this. So if I'm sitting there and I'm an opposing coach, I could pick apart a little bit of this. What can I do to alter the rhythm of this? What can I do to take this away? And now, do you have other things behind it? The funny part is, Milwaukee actually finished the first half with some great actions to where, you know, I think it was Brooke and Giannis setting a double drag for Damian Lillard with an empty side. Giannis rolls, Brooke pops to the wing, the corner's empty. And I was like, oh, you guys can tap those buttons. And then you go to Dame Giannis pick and roll and you're starting to they're starting to figure out, okay, you're very active. Let's go to pass and cut. And it's like, oh, okay. So I think I wonder if it's just the highs that you see countered with, okay, what are y'all doing that throws people off?
Yeah, I got you. And I guess this is also just a departure for what Milwaukee has been during this era, I guess, as Giannis has turned into this MVP caliber player. You just kind of expect very good offense in the regular season anyway, very good offense. Defense is just best in the league or right there. And then this year, it's just like, well, it's just a top three offense and trending upwards with what it's been over the last 2-3 weeks. And the defense, like, we will do our best. We all right when Dame and Giannis Giannis and Brooke are on the floor together. And once it becomes one of those guys, let's do our best. So it's been kind of an adjustment period for me, just as, like, a Bucks watcher. Like, see, okay, I need to recalculate what the baseline is. What constitutes as good defense for Milwaukee, or this version of Milwaukee versus what I've been used to watching. So, like, that's been fun as an analyst as well. Oh, you got to jump in?
Oh, I was just going to give a quick shout out to RJ Barrett and Emmanuel quickly. And you can just kind of see, going back to the Knicks, sorry, brain scatterbrain just went right back to them. But guys understanding what their role is, guys understanding what they can contribute, and you can see the vision of what happens when they have a little bit more balance. I think one of the biggest problems for the Knicks, particularly in this matchup, was, okay, we have Randle going, we have Brunson going, who's going to join the party? And no, everyone kind of declined or left the message on red. Maybe,
thumbs up.
Maybe a double tap.
Double tap.
No. Gotta be respectfully messy.
Go ahead.
You ever seen someone get left on red and then someone comes back like 2 hours later and they double question mark their own text?
Oh, that's not a good feeling. Because either you genuinely missed it and it's like, oh snap, my bad, or you didn't miss it and it's like, oh, I actually have to acknowledge this now. This might get a little hazy. Let me see if I can drum up something here. Let me act like this didn't happen, or just, I'm sorry, I was doing
something. Oh, yeah, my bad.
If I get kind of hazy. But yeah, to that point, that's what made the first quarter kind of refreshing. Like, I think ESPN put up the graphic, like the first 20 points were scored by either Jalen Brunson or RJ Barrett. And it's like, ah, well, in my mind, it's like, okay, so is Julius going to, what's going on here? Then he finishes with 24. And I end up tweeting during the stretch, like, hey, wait a minute. Keep an eye on the Julius post-ups or ISOs against Giannis. I feel like he's the one dude that can just, like, move Giannis. And it's such a weird thing. Like, he can just get to that short jumper whenever he wants to. Or some of those push shots. They don't always go in. Like, I think at the time I tweeted, I made the note. Like, he's 3 of 9 right now. So I'm not saying Randle's, like, beasting Giannis, etc. But, like, just game within the game stuff that I enjoy. Like, Julius Randle seems to have the cadence down. How many dribbles he can get into before getting to his actual move against Giannis. And then carving out a sliver of space. So that's fun stuff. Any closing thoughts on Knicks Bucks?
I want to give a shout out to Taj Gibson.
Yes.
A professional basketball player. And that sounds rude, but hey, man. He comes in, clocks in, does his job, and that's about it. Oh, I got to stay overtime? Oh. All right, fine. But nah, you just watch him defensively. It's a pick and roll. I'm not getting all the way up there, man. Yeah, I'm cool. I'm with the roll. You fight over. We good. Or I'm all the way up here. He picked up his dribble. You better get back in front. I'm out.
We got the nuance and pick and roll. We got like back-to-back strips against Giannis from Taj Gibson in that first half. A screening masterclass, knowing when to flip. It was a fun Taj Gibson stretch. I'll give it to him. All right, let's move to the second game of the Christmas slate. The Nuggets with a 120-114 victory over the Golden State Warriors. Jokic with 26-14-8. Though I don't think people are talking about that portion of his game. A season-high 18 free throw attempts. He made all 18 of those. Jamal Murray with 28 points in this one. Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon with double-doubles. Steph Curry with 18 points. This is a weird one. We're going to talk about Denver's defense, though, because I was very impressed with what they were able to do. Brandon Podziemski, 13 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 5 steals. Just an incredibly fun game for him. 22 points off the bench for Andrew Wiggins. 13 off the bench for Chris Paul, 14 off the bench for Dario Saric. Overall, Golden State won the bench battle 57-15, so that was very stark. And also, I think this was Ryan Blackburn who tweeted this out. Denver's bench with 0 rebounds, which is very odd and very rare, apparently. Combined minutes with 0 rebounds, I think that was the highest total we had seen in NBA history, or at least in the like StatMuse database that was tweeted out. So I was like, yeah, that's odd, but Denver got to win anyway. Before we get into major themes, can we just get the annoying part out of the way first?
What would be the annoying part?
Well, as I mentioned, Nikola Jokic with 18 free throw attempts. Denver found themselves in the bonus, and Golden State did not have fun defending Nikola Jokic while Denver was in the bonus. And Steve Kerr, after the game, Steve Kerr just makes the comments like he hates that defense has been legislated out of the games. And if I was a fan, I wouldn't have wanted to watch the second half of this game. It was disgusting. Said it was disgusting twice in his post-game comments and talking about that. So are we just in the bad place with how defense is reffed? Did anything pop for you while watching that game where it's like, okay, this feels like a little bit much? Or just what were your general takeaways on like how the game was called? before we dig into Nikias, what happened.
You know, that ain't me. I don't give a darn about that conversation. There's too much good basketball stuff that happens. It doesn't bother me. For me, I thought it was a larger conversation that was not directed at Nikola Jokic. This is just an opportunity for him to talk about it. Because Nikola Jokic is not the free throw guy.
He is not.
Matter of fact, he may average more scrapes and cuts on his arms than free throw attempts. And we'll never know. We will never know. So did you have any takeaways before I continue about how the game was officiated or what happened with the contact? Because for me, it felt like, hey, we are a team that needs to sustain defense. We are a team that has to scramble activity-wise. We are a team that struggles to keep the ball in front sometimes. And because we struggle to keep the ball in front sometimes, we end up fouling. And if we foul too many times, guess what happens? They keep going to the free throw line. And if they know they can go to the free throw line, they will now sell calls. And if they are selling calls, we are in double trouble. Because it's just a loop. That's what I took away from it. Not another freeway exit to Jokic and Embiid talk. Like, no! Stop doing that. Do something else!
There we go. I think that sums it up nicely for me. Like, I think it was just a broader point that he was making. And I guess going back to a conversation we had last year, as we talked in the offseason about the points of emphasis that the NBA were going to have, etc. And it did feel like refs were letting more defensive contact go. And so, and then naturally, like by the time we hit January, it had reverted back to what we had saw the year before. It's like, okay, well, this was neat. That's cool. So like, I do think generally there's a middle ground to be found between how much off-ball contact and even on-ball when defending drives, like how much can be allowed before it turns into foul territory. But I also, like going back to last week, I was basically defending Joel Embiid as he dropped his 50 against Minnesota. And it's like, well, no, like, he gets fouled because he's good at seeking contact and he knows the rules. But also he's like, and the broader point is he's an insane scorer. So you kind of have to play him tightly or he would just butter you or pepper you with jumpers and then get to the rim anyway. Like you can't guard him is the issue. And because he also has a firm understanding of what the rules are and is really good at reading bodies and things like that, you also cannot guard him. Like that's what makes him so difficult to deal with. So I'm just like, no, like foul drawing is a skill. I've watched enough players try to rip throughs, try the up and unders, try to lean in after pump fakes and just flail and miss to recognize, nah, not everyone can do that. Like there is an element of some stars get calls, the other guys don't. But generally, stars are better at finding that stuff and getting defenders off balance. Defenders are naturally more off balance against better players. So like, it's another loop, I guess. It's like chicken or the egg. Like, are they getting the calls because they're gaming the system or are they gaming the system because they're being defended a certain way? And now they are countering how they're being defended. So like, that's really my contribution to it. Like watching the game live and clipping the game live. Like I didn't notice anything. Like it didn't feel egregious. Like there were more stoppages, but it didn't feel like, holy crap, what are these refs calling? At least for me on first watch. Now maybe I go back through and it's just like, okay, well, maybe this was a little bit soft. I didn't like this one, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, I didn't feel an overarching, like, this game sucks to watch. So that's my contribution to the...
There's levels to it, unfortunately. There's levels to it. And if you know how to sell a call or you're going to get the benefit of the doubt, that's just, it's human error. It's going to go up and down. It's going to go back and forth. I think it takes away from the game because, you know, what's funny. You mentioned it as you were reeling off the stats. You kind of had this very interesting dynamic where... the Nuggets have that starting lineup and all five of their starters score 16 or more points. And Michael Porter Jr. and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jamal Murray all hit three or more threes and they were all plus 13 or better. And then their bench waves arms wildly. And then you had the Warriors who did a whole bunch of good things in this game and put themselves in a position to win this game. And it was just the day where, oh, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson shot 10 of 33 from the field.
Yeah, I quickly raised my hand.
What's up?
I don't even know if this Klay, I guess this is like a tier below respectfully Messi.
Oh, no.
So what's the thing with Steph on Christmas? What's the bit? I don't get it.
What do you mean?
It just seems like the averages on Christmas Day are... not what you would expect from someone of his caliber. like the actual answer is just like who he's facing, how he's defending, and then just shot randomness. Like that's the real bit, but like I want to have some fun with it.
Okay.
It's just odd that he, yeah. That was one of those. But actually, if I could quickly use that as a segue to talk about Denver's defense, because I had a lot of fun watching it.
Oh, okay.
Like I think either the box score or the highlights, you quickly point to like some of the Michael Porter Jr. blocks in this one, which some on-ball blocks. He got the chase down on Clay as he was coming off of an action. That was fun. He got one in the corner late in the game. Really appreciate his effort. But overall, like what they did to Steph, like mixing in their usual Jokic is at the level, played him more aggressively. We got some full-blown traps from Jokic in this one. And then they started peppering in some switches. I was like, wait a minute. I'm glad I understand you got to try this, but you just switched Jokic out 30 feet from the basket. What's going on here? Scramming Jokic out of there. It being able to navigate and rotate behind that. Kentucky's call with Pope was just in Steph's jersey. So that was a lot of fun to watch. And it continues one of the more underrated defensive seasons in the league this year of what KCP's been able to do. They just felt locked in for most of that game. That didn't mean Golden State didn't score. Like I was looking at I looked up some of the second spectrum numbers yesterday. It's like, okay, this defense on Steph felt really good. Let me peep where they end up on like the Steph pick and rolls. Just over 1.1 points per possession on trips featuring a Steph pick and roll. And it's like, ah, well, makes sense because the ball did swing. They were able to find some cuts and stuff from there. But they did a really good job of taking Steph away, or more accurately, taking Steph out of rhythm. And I think that contributed to the off shooting from Steph. And so naturally, you just can't take everything away. Like, Steph didn't shoot well. Clay didn't shoot well. But, like, Golden State was still able to find stuff. And then you bring Andrew Wiggins off the bench. And particularly late in that game, it's just, oh, cool. You have Jamal Murray on Andrew Wiggins. And y'all have been, you know, sending all this attention to Steph and stuff. How about we just skip all of that? Well, let's just run something early with Steph. And then let's just dump it to Andrew Wiggins. You get downhill. Y'all have fun with that. And it's just like, oh, that's a nice luxury to have as Andrew Wiggins continues to play pretty well since moving to the bench. I want to quickly note that. But, no, overall, and I think even if you zoom out with that, I think Denver takes Golden State is spamming Andrew Wiggins post-ups versus, holy crap, Steph's running around again. Oh, no, they're running pick and roll, and now it's a stagger for Clay, and we got to deal with that too. Going back to your point, heading into the Christmas matchups, where you asked, like, can Golden State hit the notes to where Jokic is at the level, he drops back, and now you got to get back up to the level? Can you take advantage of him making those multiple efforts? Can you create some things out of that? And it felt like, particularly late in that game, Golden State really couldn't tap that button as much as they had been in the past. So, like, I was just really impressed with what Denver was able to do defensively.
I'm glad you mentioned Denver's defense. And for me, they're showcasing or trying to attempt to display a little bit of scheme versatility to a degree, or at least as much as they can provide. And that's no disrespect there. But you mentioned, hey, we're going to be up in pick and roll against Steph Curry. There was a possession in the first quarter, like around the 325 mark. I think Steph Curry comes off. The right side is empty. Jokic is at the level. There's two on the ball. Jamal Murray is locked in with nail help, right? Mm-hmm. And so Steph Curry is driving towards the middle. Dario Saric dives. Jamal Murray takes his nail help and just goes with Saric, which is, if you know rotations, an insane rotation. But it took away the roll while you still had two on the ball. Now, it did open up Andrew Wiggins wide open for three, but I think that was very much a, this is the poison we are going to take. You now have to make us take this and make us adjust. You mentioned switching Jokic out. That's something Denver will mix in. Now, does it work very well all the time? Question mark. You know, there are times where, okay, I understand why you did it. There's other times where it's like, you kind of left Jokic on an island with no help behind him. This didn't end very well. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're willing to try it is important, you know? And I think this is a Denver team where they are so key on their help and their rotations and their closeouts. It's nice to have something in the back pocket for those nights where the rotations just aren't quite there, where they're late with their help, where they're not quite as locked in. Because that does happen. I mean, you can literally, if you've watched the Nuggets long enough, you can tell where their defense is at just by watch the backline guys, watch the weak side guys, watch their movements. And you'd be like, okay, this might be one of those nights for Denver. But I think being able to mix that in is important, especially in a matchup like this. And that's one of those things that's going to be important come playoff time moving forward. I think for me, going back to the Warriors, you got the production from Wiggins. But I guess my question is, are they just a team that's searching right now? Are they finding bits and pieces, but then also having to A, win, and B, sustain what they found? You know, do you feel stronger about their base with some of the shifts they've made with pods, playing TJD more? Or is it still wait and see mode, or they're trying to find it mode?
Well, I guess I'll quickly note, like, Golden State lost this game to Denver, who's one, they're very good. But two, like, this is, that kind of ended a streak for Golden State. Like, they had been winning as of late. And so I don't want to do the, well, they lost everything. They're back in disarray again. So I don't want to do that. Golden State has been playing well. It does feel like they're starting to find some stuff, particularly with the rotations. Like you mentioned, Paz getting more playing time and Trayce Jackson-Davis getting more playing time. I just love watching both of those dudes rock, which is very much part of the Nekias bid. If you want to go back to like season one of the Dunker Pod, if you want to do that for our longtime listeners slash watchers. But no, like, to the overall theme of like Golden State and the reads that they want those guys to be able to make, like Posh just fits in. He's such a good cutter. He's such a good relocator, regardless of if the 3-point shot is falling or not. Like watching him fly in for offensive rebounds is a lot of fun. Like he just has a nose for the ball and where he's supposed to be. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis, like I'm keeping an eye on some of the short roll stuff for him. It seems like it's one, it feels like he's pretty solid already, but it does feel like the reads are getting quicker as he continues getting more playing time. But just giving them that vertical threat offensively and like some of the rim protection flashes, I want to see more from him defensively, but he's a rookie big man, so that's, I mean, that's just going to come with time. But just the vertical presence that he gives Golden State is so different. It gives them a little level of pop, and then you factor in just what Steph is, what he means to this offense, even when shots aren't falling. Again, 18 points for Steph, didn't shoot well from three, I think 3 of 13 from three, objectively not a good Steph game offensively. And you still look at how keyed in Denver was and making sure you may have not have made shots through the first three quarters. We know you can score 9 in 45 seconds. Absolutely not you. Speaks to his greatness. So you still have that regardless if he's making shots or not. Klay Thompson, who's been on an absolute heater, by the way, didn't have a great shot. Didn't have a great shooting performance today, yesterday. You still think about the attention that he gets. So like it feels like Golden State is getting closer to, we can create, we can get two on the ball with Steph anytime we want. Klay is back to making shots and not let teams like let Klay shoot anyway. But now he's had this extended run of he's back to making shots. We can't do that either. We have two guys in the offense by virtue of their movement and their shooting gravity when they're spaced to where we can open things up. And now Paz can make plays in the intermediate area. Trayce can make plays in the intermediate area. You bring other guys, Jonathan Kuminga, who's also been playing pretty well. Decision-making still waiting on to get a little bit better, but he is a downhill force for a team that needs guys that can get downhill. So it does, the offense, at least, is starting to feel a lot better to me. Defensively, we shall see where it lands.
Defensively, it's about sustaining right now. And obviously, there's an element that could or should or will help them, but I am not doing that today. I think that they had some really quality possessions against Denver where it's like, hey, this is good activity, two on the ball, weak sides in, good help, skip pass, oh. That closeout got beat, or, oh, that's a 3-point shot. And for me, defensively, it's about, can they just sustain it? Can they sustain multiple efforts? That's not necessarily a Warriors thing for me, though. That's kind of a league thing right now. Mm-hmm. And I know it's easy to point to, but no one plays defense. Teams are guarding. I just think, one, they have to guard more things than they usually have to, more options, more pace, more tempo. And I think more space and more teams around the league can take that one breakdown that you have and punish you for it. That used to be the tippy-top teams where, oh, no, we make a mistake, we're cooked. That can happen against Washington if they decide to move the ball. No disrespect, Wizards fans. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to use you as an example, but y'all score a lot of points. No, they score a lot of points. So, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where now, oh, wait, our rotations are late. Oh, my gosh. They're still playing. So I just think there's kind of a balance there to where analysis-wise, my mind is like, okay, how do I judge these defenses? Am I now taking away, you know, usually you can watch the first effort and the second effort and understand, do I have to now see if they can sustain three or four? And now, okay, you defended the sets. And that's the other thing. It's not like it's a ton of sets. as far as we're going to walk the ball up, call exactly this, you can take this away. Teams are executing good things, but you don't necessarily have the beat on when it's coming and why it's coming. And so it's just different. Went on a little tangent there, but.
Oh, that's fine.
You know.
And it's very important. So just keeping an eye on Golden State's defense as they, factor in other sources of defense moving forward at some point this season, question mark. Shrug emoji, I guess we'll see. But I generally feel like I'm in a better place with Golden State than I was, because it was very much just looking hazy leading into suspension and all that good stuff. It's like, okay, what is this team? Because I came into this year pretty high on Golden State. And right now, they're 10. And they're only a half game ahead of Phoenix, who lost last night, which we'll get to that game soon-ish, I suppose. But any closing thoughts on Warriors Nuggets before we move?
I just kind of want to give a shout-out to the Nuggets in general. Like, imagine we're in a place where they have arrived at not only the Christmas Day game, but also we just kind of do this. This is what we do, and we're going to showcase it on display. You know, it's going to be Jamal Murray making shots, Jokic making plays, confidence with our whole lineup. Obviously, I think you could point a question at the bench, but I think they have done a good job of making sure these guys are getting these minutes, getting these reps. If we have to shorten things up, we have to shorten things up. But everyone's kind of aware of what the mission is and what we're trying to accomplish. And I think it's another good step for Denver, especially on the stage. You know, I think when they can mix in the defense, when they can mix in that lineup, it's pretty tough.
I do appreciate this being the Jokic Curry showcase, generally, from the NBA view. And they went, a combined 11 of 33 from the field. And I'm sure that the execs were happy with that one. Let's move to Celtics-Lakers, a 126-115 victory for the Boston Celtics. 25-8-7 for Jason Tatum, 28-11 for Kristaps Porzingis, 18-11 assists for Derek White, 18-7-7 for Drew, 19 for Jaylen Brown, a 10-point surge from Pritchard off the bench for Boston. On the Lakers side, 40-13 for Anthony Davis. He had 13-5 in the first quarter, 16-9-8 for LeBron, 17 for Torian Prince, 11 points off the bench for Austin Reeves, along with 6 boards, 12 points off the bench for Rui, 8 points and 6 assists off the bench as well for D'Angelo Russell. What was your major theme of this one? Or what was your main takeaway from this game?
Well, I could ask you a question in return. Sure. I don't mean to be rude. Did you have any Lakers lineup change thoughts? That seemed to be a hashtag hot topic. Some had some really strong opinions on it not working before they went and beat Oklahoma City. Did you have any overall thoughts there before we dive into this one?
Well, I guess we can knock it out early. Went to PvP stats this morning to see, okay, what is this starting lineup looking like? What is it going through? They played 19 minutes together so far. They've been outscored by 8 points in those 19 minutes. They are 10 of 33 inside the arc, which is very not good. 4 of 7 from 3, which is like, okay, cool. You're 4 of 7. Also, you've only taken 7 in 19 minutes, which feels like part of the issue. And I think if I can just very quickly get into Laker theme, because I had a lineup thing for them. I think this was the matchup that highlights all the concerns that people may have about this particular lineup. Because I don't want to say I can get behind the theory, because ultimately I don't think this would be my starting lineup if I was coaching the Lakers. Also, I'm also just a podcaster, so take it with a grain of salt. But I do think the theory behind the lineup is strengthening your strength. Let's get this defense even better. Let's get Jared Vanderbilt in here so we can just keep LeBron on the back line if we want to and keep him in a roamer role. You have a whole lot of collective size. You can hammer home the switching to a bigger degree now. And for a Lakers half-court offense that has struggled anyway, I can get the logic behind, well, let's just beef up this defense even more. Let's force some more turnovers. We can maybe get a little bit more aggressive with some of the length that we have behind guys. Force some turnovers, or at the very least, force some misses, get out in transition more. Let's get some early offense stuff. And if we do miss, we got Jared Vanderbilt not flying in for offensive rebounds, so we at least get more cracks at it. So, I ultimately wouldn't land there, but I could see how Darvin Ham got there. But then I look at the half-court offense against Boston in particular, and it is Kristaps Porzingis, quote-unquote, guarding Jared Vanderbilt. I was like, oh, no. That's not ideal. And Boston's just switching all over the place otherwise. And so you look at Anthony Davis trying to set some stuff up. they may run a pick and roll with LeBron. He may get a smaller guy on him. I think it was Drew Holiday that got LeBron assignment. All right, cool. We got Drew on AD. Drew's an incredible defender, but AD is bigger. Neat. Two dribbles for AD. You think you're going to get something good? He picks up the ball, gathers, he turns. Here's Kristaps Porzingis in space. And it's like, oh, not ideal. Not ideal at all. And then you think about who the kickouts are too. If Cam Reddish got a kickout, it's like, all right, cool. Shoot it, brother. That's fine. If Jared Belovic caught on the perimeter, all right, cool. Do something about it, bud. That's neat. And even Torian Prince, who has just had the most roller coaster season of a shooter this year, even then the ball swings to him and I'm not seeing hard closeouts to Torian Prince. And it's like, that's a lot of pressure on LeBron James and Anthony Davis to carry the offensive load anyway. And then you factor in, they can't get the easy ones inside, or at the very least through 19 minutes, very small sample. Through 19 minutes, they haven't been able to get the easy ones in the half court yet. It's tough for me. Like, I do think generally 19 minutes is too small of a sample size to just completely say we're never doing this again. But like, Boston kind of highlighted all of the issues with what they're doing with that lineup.
But not everyone's Boston.
That's true.
I will throw that out there. So here's my thing. You nailed a lot of what I was going to say. More size, more length, get more stops, run, get the defense going, play off LeBron and AD. Now, here's the thing. When we want to talk about spacing and shooting and not being able to get the easy looks, was any team going to allow LeBron James and Anthony Davis to get the easy looks anyways?
They were not.
Yeah, no. So no, you don't want to exacerbate the problem, but it's not like I walk in on a game plan. It's like, well, this is easier.
We can now double LeBron. They're going to try to do that anyway.
So here's my thing. It's for me, one thing that stood out was, especially in the OKC game, oh, we're going to play through Anthony Davis a little bit more. We're going to do a little bit more delay action. We're going to do a little bit more dribble handoffs. We have to generate a little bit more movement in the half court because we don't have the built-in scorer that we had in the lineup or the built-in shooter that we had in the lineup. And yes, it's a little reductive and going backwards, but sometimes as a team, if you go backwards, it may take you forwards. Your starting lineup, your best lineup may not be your best five players. And for me, in my mind, honestly, when you said 19 minutes, that stood out to me. That's over two games, right? Mm-hmm. Which tells me, hey, this is a start, but now we are going to blend into all the other things that we want to do. And if we can get a good defensive start from this lineup, this unit, mix it back in with another run, but get everyone else going at the same time, now we have a different kind of tempo and flow. That's just where my brain goes. And that might just be, hey, either I got hit too many times in the head or I did way too many hashtag coach things, but that's where my mind went. Reeves and Rui being the first subs is interesting. Rui getting off to a good start is another thing. Back to this game, and actually it ties in because I feel like the worst part of this lineup change was the two matchups that they chose to go ahead and employ this with, OKC and Boston. And as you mentioned, Boston did not want to cooperate at all. And this is the second game in a row for the Boston Celtics where they have decided to take, hey, this is fun what you guys do offensively. How much fun are you guys going to have if we just go ahead and tilt these matchups? So I go back to the Clipper game over the weekend. And the Clippers obviously had been rolling. They had no Kawhi, but hey, we're feeling good about ourselves. We're finding our rhythm. James Harden picking role play. Paul George, we got it. Hey, here's Jason Tatum on Zubac. Here's Al Horford on Terrence Mann. Hey, all that Zubac, it's a switch now. So, hey, Terrence Mann, why don't you come up here? Oh, y'all don't have the same pick and roll chemistry. Ah. Oh, you figured it out a little bit. Here's another switch. Good luck, buddy. You mentioned it against the Lakers. Hey, here's Jason Tatum on Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Here's Porzingis on Vanderbilt. Two keys here with that to add to what you said. Derek White also roaming on the weak side. Drew Holiday on LeBron was key because of his, not just ball pressure, but I can navigate screens very, very well. And so even if you guys want to make the adjustment to have Vanderbilt screen, I can do just enough to stay attached to where Porzingis just has to stay back there. He'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And now that Vanderbilt has rolled, guess where Kristaps Porzingis is?
In the paint.
We're exactly where he wants to be. And if you want to mix in these switches or you want to say, hey, Rui, come in screen. You got Jaylen Brown. Let's mix it up a little bit. Fine. I'll switch that. Mm-hmm. I'm still Drew Holiday. and so that's where I think, you know, it gets interesting. The other thing is that Celtics starting group is so good. It's so good. I know it's very easy to take some of Boston's late game struggles and look at it and tie it back to it's kind of always this. And I understand that. I don't want to take that away from anyone. But we got to remember, they don't get in those scenarios sometimes because that unit is very strong, very hard to defend. Once they get you in rotation, you got a lot of things that you have to operate with. And you got a lot of different lineups you could deal with. And Porzingis just adds such a different dynamic for them because whatever you felt comfortable with, okay, pick and roll, let's do a late switch if you're the Lakers. Or let's just switch it. Oh, he popped. Oh, he shot that. Oh. Oh, that's Drew Holiday operating with the ball. Oh. Oh. He faked the handoff, just went right to a pull-up. Oh, like it's just the timing of when they kind of hit those. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah, that just, it's a very reductive point for me anyway, but like the fact that Boston can just hit you with 5, 6, or 7 different players to just have a wave for you is insane. Like it's 25 for Jason Tatum, you feel the stat sheet, like it didn't feel like a great scoring game for him, and it didn't matter. Because Jaylen Brown could just get downhill or sprinkle in pull-ups. Or Derek White could hit timely threes or get downhill. Or Kristaps can mix in pops and also post-ups, in which he remains one of, if not the most effective poster in the NBA. Again. Like, the Washington stuff has just carried over on a better team. That is terrifying, in addition to what he brings as a spacer and as a shooter. And it's just like, his very presence on the court impacts so much. It helps further unlock the lineup. I mean, the scheme versatility defensively. Offensively, just a pick and pop for Kristaps Porzingis will give you something good. If you are in drop and you don't pre-rotate to the pop, he is comfortable taking those shots. If you are in a drop and you try to pre-rotate to it, look at who's beside Kristaps Porzingis when they run those pops and how quickly he moves the ball side to side, or if that guy just dives to try to remove that help, he's also good at picking out cutters. And if you just turn it into a switch, all right, cool. It's not going to be a switch and let me give some nail help now, because you don't want to leave Kristaps Porzingis alone. It opens up the driving lane. So it's just like, he's been such an amplifier to everything that they want to do. I've been very impressed with Kristaps and like that pop for me in that game as well. Very quickly, because you made the point about, you know, Drew having to navigate or Drew having to switch and stuff like that. Like I did appreciate, I think it was midway or later in the third quarter, where the Lakers go with Bron, AD, pick and roll. It's like, all right, cool, it's a switch. It's Drew on AD again. Then Bron's like, all right, let me call up Jared Vanderbilt. Get Kristaps in the drop. And then he doesn't really engage the pick and roll. It's just a quick dump off to AD with Drew with no help coming. It's like, okay, y'all are at least trying to counter what Boss is trying to do here. But even that's the point. You have to run a second ball screen to open up your post up for Anthony Davis against Drew Holiday. And you zoom out, it's like, oh, this is still post-heavy offense against a team that will shoot 83s if you ask them to. And so even in a possession that you score, you had to work hard to get there. It still wasn't a mismatch because Drew has been defending up all year long. He's been really good at it. And you're in the math battle, which I will say quickly on the Boston front, because they lost the plot in the second quarter. It was very to the three-point foot. So many one or no pass possessions and a bunch of contested threes. And it's like, all right, I'm not going to go full Barkley because I don't think you should do that. But like, I did have a moment in that second quarter as the Lakers stormed all the way back where I'm just like, guys, you have so much talent. And I mentioned at the top, like Peyton Pritchard had that 10-point surge early in the second quarter. The fact that you kind of had to rely on that, and even then it didn't feel like it was a bunch of easy stuff being created. Let's keep it rolling. You're getting good things. You have matchups to pick at. I'm not even worried about the tempo that you're playing with, because like part of the problem is that you were just taking quick shots without moving the ball. So it ain't even a tempo deal. Like literally leverage the talent that you have, get downhill to create some easier catch and shoot opportunities at the very least. Versus what you're doing. So, like, there's always that element for Boston you got to keep an eye on. But overall, like, everyone gave him something, as reductive as that sounds. Like, I did enjoy the Jason Tatum playmaking. I can't quite get to the Magic Johnson reference on the broadcast, but I did appreciate the playmaking from Jason Tatum in this one. Boston's really good, man. Boston's really good. I'll quickly ask you. We recently did All-Star stuff, but I'll check back in. Where are you at on Derek White, since that's also been discourse?
Derek White is an All-Star?
Yeah, where are you at?
Derek White has an All-Star case. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough number-wise for Derek White to become an All-Star.
Okay.
And the only reason I say that, it's not because Cam Thomas is playing very well. I need to stop. Sorry. It's more that the East has a lot of really good guards. So, I mean, if you're talking Tyrese Maxey, you're talking Tyrese Halliburton, you're taking Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell. That's four slots, just in theory. Also, Damian Lillard exists.
And Trae Young exists.
That's a fifth. Trae Young exists. So I'm not saying that Derek White couldn't be an All-Star. They shouldn't be an All-Star. It's numbers game for him right now. Mm-hmm. And so I would say there's a higher likelihood that a Porzingis sneaks in as the second Celtics All-Star than a Derek White. You? Okay. Where are you at with it?
I feel you. Like, I think for me, when we had the All-Star conversation, I had Derek White on my short list. So I think generally I'm closer to Derek White's an All-Star than you. No, don't disrespect anything like that. But I think I'm generally closer to that than you are. I do agree, though, like, especially since Dame is back to making shots in addition to what he's been doing as a driver all year long. And also Milwaukee's been very good. And also Dame's just been slamming a bunch of doors in clutch time. Like, it's going to be tough to get to Derek White over Dame. I think if Derek White makes the All-Star team non-injury replacement edition, what's going to happen is that voters are going to be annoyed by what's happening in Atlanta and or just look at the record and said, nah, Derek White's been impactful for a winner. You have not been. As much as I would hate that argument for like 18 different reasons. I think the case is as you get into the number of games with the guards, I think like Trey would just be, that probably just ends up being like Derek White over Trey. And that becomes an outroar that I probably agree with because we should stop doing this to Trey. He's very good. Other than that, like, I don't know. And like, it's interesting to talk about like Derek White's value with Boston, period. Because I think if you just zoom out very basic level, who are the most important players for Boston? Like, I would imagine it is Tatum one. He's just in pen. And then you can kind of shuffle 2 through 4 or 2 through 5 on any given night between White, Drew, Kristaps, and Jaylen Brown. And then once you factor in like what the overall load is, like Derek White is probably like 3 or 4 with what everyone's asked to do. But then you think about cumulative impact or just the consistent floor that's hit. Like you can get to Derek White at 2 as the second most impactful Boston guy. Like I don't know. I guess generally I don't sneeze at the Derek White All-Star case like some people do that might just look at the box score numbers and be like, nah.
So
but like it. What's up?
I mean to cut you off, but I did a little research as you were speaking.
Okay.
Is the bit going to be, now how far can the media get him up voting-wise in their portion?
Yeah, because the fans, I don't think they're going to get, like, the Boston fans will vote, obviously, but I don't think enough outside Boston people will vote for Derek White to even get him close to starting.
And will the players give him that? And the other thing is, when I look at the fans, right, I looked at last year's voting returns real quick. Number one was Kyrie. He's no longer in that conference. Number two is Donovan Mitchell. Number three was Jaylen Brown. So if the bit is that Jaylen Brown sneaks in and gets voted in, and that's no disrespect, but I'm just saying numbers-wise, James Harden was fourth. Trae Young was fifth. DeMar was sixth. Like, hey. Obviously, there'll be a surge with Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton, but I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
It might get a little hazy, but I figured I'd get your thoughts on that very quickly. Any closing Lakers-Celtics thoughts before we move?
I try not to overreact to these ones. I guess if I'm the Lakers, I would like to find how can we truly, truly, truly get Austin Reeves going? Mm. What can we do to open things up for him in these type of games? How can we respond to the league responding to his success to a degree? And I want to ask that question without being disrespectful, but at a certain point, this worked because of how well he was playing. I think, you know, obviously there's always going to be trade whispers. I think to a degree, you know, you can get D'Angelo Russell to a certain space no matter where he comes off the bench. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So can you get Austin Reaves going? What is your best closing lineup is far more important to me than who starts. And so can you get to a space where that's in a better place? I guess it's just, can you refine your base? I think it's obvious you want to use size and length and use your defense to get out and run. You've got Anthony Davis playing at a very, very high level, which feels like a very big win for the Lakers. But now can you find enough around it to where our defense is this, our rotations are that, this is our package, this is going to be tough to deal with in the playoffs? That feels like the formula to me. So they've got to march towards that. But it's the Lakers, so the conversation is going to ebb and flow.
Yeah. As it does. But that is what you sign up for when you are the Los Angeles Lakers. Okay, let's move to the game I was blessed to be at. Very cool. The Miami Heat defeating the Philadelphia 76ers, 119-113. No Joel Embiid, no Jimmy Butler. Also, just a lot of other injuries for Miami, to the point where Caleb Martin gets hurt early in the game, and we see RJ Hampton play significant minutes in this one. Kind of speaks to the bench that, like, no Josh Richardson, no Haywood Highsmith. So Miami had to dig a little bit deeper in their bench than they anticipated, but 6-point win nonetheless. Jaime Jaquez Jr. with 31-10 and 2 steals to boot. Very fun basketball game for him. We'll get more into it, obviously. Bam with 26-15-5. Tyler Hero with 22-6-5. Duncan Robinson with 16 points off the bench. He went 5-10 from 3. Kevin Love, nearly a double-double off the bench. 8 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. Not a fun game for Tyrese Maxey. Only 12 points and 5 assists. Went 3 of 12 inside the arc and 1 of 8 outside of it. Also went 3 of 6 from the free throw line. Very odd at the end of that game with the Sixers getting to the line. The arena just being completely irate with some of the calls Philly was getting in the fourth quarter. And they just missed free throw after free throw after free throw after free throw. It was very odd to witness. But anyway, not the best day for Tyrese Maxey, but 27-7-6 for Tobias Harris, 25-7 for Kelly Oubre. Mo Bamba with 18 points and 6 boards off the bench. Anthony Melton with 15 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals, and a block. Though we'll get into the defense shortly with Anthony Melton, regardless of the box score there. I certainly have thoughts since I was in arena, but anything pop for you while watching?
Well, you got to – this isn't a place to pass the ball. You were there. You were live and in the building. This ain't the time to swing to me. I will bounce off you. Now, I will want to say real quick, just to be respectfully messy and add a little jokey joke. I told Nikias that Joel Embiid was not going to play this game as soon as I saw him roll his ankle against Toronto and play the entire rest of the way with half an ankle. And then I also told Nikias, hey, big dog, I don't think Jimmy Butler going to play either because Joel ain't playing. And here we go with Bam Adebayo showcase. Although, shout out to Philadelphia because I was like, hey, this is a lot of Paul Reed early. And I was like, hey, this is kind of working. But what were your takeaways from the Heat? Well, actually, you know what? I'll ask this question.
Okay.
Is it how big of a sign for Miami and how do you kind of manage this stretch for Miami, where Miami is having a lot of success, but it's not traditionally in the Miami way? Like, this isn't like the, hey, our defense has done X, Y, and Z, or hey, the 3-point shooting has gone insane. It's kind of like, hey, Duncan Robinson's a lot better, and Tyler Hero's also back, and Bam's pretty good, and Jaime's very good. And so it's a different collection of their parts. Am I off there, or?
No, I don't think you're off. I think for me, and funny enough, I was talking to my guy, Giancarlo Navas of Miami Heat Beat, Heat Beat alumni right here. But anyway,
did he pay you?
I was talking
for
to him at the game yesterday, huh?
Did he pay you for that?
No. Oh, okay. My bad. He should, though. No, I'm just kidding. But I was talking to him about this yesterday. And, like, it's such an odd feeling Heat year. And it also brings me back to, like, a Cooper Moorhead tweet from a while ago, where he was just like, okay, so these guys haven't played, but these guys are playing, and now they're filling this role. But it was a very convoluted tweet. It was like, yeah, so this sounds like the Heat, because they are once again doing the mix and match thing with all the injuries that they're dealing with. And so it's like encouraging, but also with Miami, I guess, would be the way that I frame it. because the offense does feel better. And, you know, I'll transition shortly into, like, I was very impressed with what Miami did offensively against Philadelphia last night. But, like, the offense feels better, and it's in a way that doesn't seem super unsustainable, which I think should be the encouraging part. But now look at the defense, and it's just like, well, the defense just backslid in the time that Bam was out. Bam comes back and is naturally better with Bam on the floor, but it still isn't it's not the usual split that you're used to. If you think back the last 2 years, like even if Miami would finish like eight into the 8th to 12th range defensive rating wise, when Bam's on the floor, they're firmly like a top three defense or better. It hasn't really been that. And then you zoom out beyond Bam, and we were having this discussion at a watch party not too long ago. Who's been Miami's best perimeter defender this year? Like, that's probably the part where I'm just like, I don't know how to feel about this Heat team right now. They are getting the wins, and they are in a better place at this time this year than they were last year. And so you shouldn't just completely poo-poo on that. But you think about the broader context of what Miami is and what they're trying to do. Like, this is very much a Jimmy Butler is still here. Bam is very good. These are the two that have been to two finals. They want to get to another one. And so within that context, it's like, do I feel better about Miami in a postseason setting right now? And I don't think my answer is yes. Mm. Because the defense has just not felt right all year long. And like, I recognize that the biggest portion of that pie is because of the injuries. Like, very niche. Like, you're not going to get the same zone productivity without Caleb Martin or without Haywood Highsmith, stuff like that. Not naturally, when Bam isn't there, it's going to be different. And when Jimmy isn't there, even this version of him, which hasn't been like apex Jimmy, you still worry about him on the weak side because of how well he's able to play the passing lanes, how good of a nail helper he generally is and stuff like that. So like, the health is the biggest reason. But even then, again, Jimmy hasn't felt the same. Kyle Lowry's been solid. The Josh Richardson signing has just not gone the way that I thought it was going to go. And as you know, I was pretty high on them bringing him back, especially at the minimum. Like, okay, this is solid. You lose Max Strus, you're not going to get that same shooting. You might get the bump in defense. That has not been the case so far this year. And you go on down the line, it's just like, okay, who do you trust to stop the ball right now? How good is Miami at just defending drives right now?
Hey, what's up? This is fun. I'm glad we did this because I feel like we're in a rerun, because I feel like we have had this conversation at least two of the 3 years that we have done this podcast, where Nekias is like, hey, I'm not sure about this. And then, oh, they're guarding. Oh, this looks different. Oh, like I think it's a different Miami season because there's some of the same notes but different elements. Like Jaime Jaquez in the games without Jimmy Butler just kind of is like, hey, I can do some of that too. You don't really have to call it. I'll just do some of that. Like, let me get the ball and like drive or post up. It's fine. And it's like, oh, that's a little different. Mm-hmm. Y'all aren't just stuck. But you also have the possessions where, hey, where is the offensive flow and ball movement? And then it's like, oh, y'all found it. Cool. You guys can generate shots. And it's Duncan Robinson off the bounce over and over and over and over and over again. Like, that's a different element. But you also still have the same Miami Heat. Hey, we're up 12. Oh, no. We're tied. Oh, no. We're down 10. Oh, yes. We're tied. And so I understand that they're a tough team to evaluate. But I think for Miami, this kind of build, as backwards as it may be, always ends up paying off for them because they have to put the work in. There's no other option. There's no other option but to find it offensively. There's no other option but to work defensively and try and find it. Hey, you may not have the same zone. We may not be able to play as much zone. But if we can take as many of these lumps in man-to-man, that might pay off for us later, because we know what happens when it's bad, and we've had to live through that. Now, that sounds like an insane thing to say, but that just kind of feels like the Miami Heat way. How impressed were you with Jaime Jaquez? Like,
dude, I was very much being a sicko watching the game and then also clipping the game while I was there. And so there was a possession in the first half where Jaime gets a post up against Marcus Morris. Duncan Robinson's one pass away. Kelly Oubre is doing like the, okay, Duncan's here, let me dig, and all right, let me commit and then try to get back out. And so he digs, Jaime accepts the dig, Duncan Robinson just jets to the right corner. Kelly loses him. It's a kick to Duncan Robinson, gets a three. And I clipped that play in my thread. And I was like, I understand Kelly want to be like an active presence on this post-up. And I know Kame has been, you know, statistically one of the best post-up players in the league this year. I don't know if you need to help that aggressively when he's posting up someone bigger than him. Like, just kind of let that rock. You don't want to lose Duncan Robinson. And like, I want to say it was either one or two possessions later, coming out of a timeout, Kevin Love comes off a screen at the elbow, tosses it to him. He tosses it. Hame flashes middle against Marcus Morris. One dribble, bop, post hook, and he scores. And I clipped that play too, and I was like, you know what? Maybe you should send help on Hame. Because that was so quick and so smooth. But man, it was just a continuation of all the good things that he's been doing in a very loud like box score package. So it's very cool for him to have that kind of platform on Christmas, to where everyone can kind of see what Heat fans have been seeing all year long, to where like it might be like a 13-point game for Hame, but you see the post scoring, you see the playmaking out of the post, you see the cutting, you see how quickly he moves the ball when the defense is in rotation. You'll see all those things that may just be like 13-3-3. On Monday, it's 31-10. It's like, oh, these drives hit, the playmaking hits, the post-ups are cool. It wasn't until the fourth quarter that he started missing threes. Like, check the box score in the third quarter. He's like, he's 9 of 10 from the field. I was like, wait a minute. I know it's felt like a good Hame game. I didn't know it was that while watching and clipping. But he's been so good for this team. And it was just fun to watch him operate in literally all of the ways against Philadelphia. Again, very, very basic thought here, but like it would have been cool for both of these teams to be at full strength, because I would have loved to have seen what Miami does to Joel Embiid as he's on this tear. Do they still do the fronting? How often do they double him? Do they just let Bam, they just put Bam on an island? Do we see any cross matching and then bring immediate doubles? Like, what are they going to do there? And, you know, just to rope it back into the Hame conversation, if Joel Embiid is in the paint instead of like Paul Reed or Mo Bamba, how aggressive are those drives? I don't think, based on what we've seen from Hame this year, he wouldn't have been afraid to drive at Joel Embiid. I don't know if that would have went well, but I at least would have liked to see him get some reps. So, okay, he's driving against an elite rim protector. Does the craft improve? Is it going to be a whole bunch of pump fakes and passing it out? Is it just that he is 3 of 9 at the rim game? Like, I would have liked to have seen that, but absent of Joel Embiid, he was still very aggressive and he had a lot of success inside the arc. And being able to toss in those touch shots as well is just a very complete effort for him.
Let me ask you a question bouncing off that and going in a quickly different direction.
Okay.
Because I don't, you know, there's no disrespect to the game, but no Embiid, Maxey didn't make shots. I don't really want to put the flashlight on Philly right now. They're a pretty good team. With Miami, the importance of Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero is the biggest key. Hey, the defense isn't that bad when they're together. Mm-hmm. Is that the bit? If they hold on to that, does that change your belief in them come playoff time?
I think it can. Like, I think there's going to be a really, if Miami gets any semblance of full strength, which is the Miami Heat, so the answer is probably not, right? That's just not what they do. They don't get fully healthy. They just figure it out and then make runs anyway. But I do think, in theory, there's a really fun conversation to be had about who closes with this team. Because last night, it was Kyle Lowry who played well. Just wasn't a big, loud box score game for him, but just did a little bit of everything on both ends of the floor. They close with Kyle Lowry, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Hame, and Bam. I would imagine a playoff setting, like Jimmy Butler is replacing one of those guys. I'm curious to see like who that's going to be, though. Because I don't think Kyle has played at a level in which you just take him off the floor in clutch time. In addition to just the veteran know-how that he has, he's also played well. He's knocked down threes. Playmaking has been there. Pushes in transition when he needs to. All the little plays defensively. Like, there was a sequence in the first half where Miami eventually ends in a foul for, I think, Kevin Love on a drive. But Lowry peels in defensively, gets a steal. Miami doesn't score. He then has to defend a 3-on-1 fast break. Flashes a hand against Daniel House at the rim. Daniel House misses. Miami doesn't score again. Then he flies in for an offensive rebound. And it's just like, oh, this is just the Kyle Lowry experience. It's very neat. But like, I think there's an argument to be made if you really just prioritize the shooting if Tyler and Duncan can hold up enough defensively, why couldn't you close with Tyler, Duncan, Hame, Jimmy, and Bam? And you just maximize the spacing. You also just have, really, you have five threats that you're probably comfortable with scoring the ball. And if it's a switch-all situation, Hame has showed you enough on the box that, okay, I can post up against someone. Is that you want me to do? Jimmy Butler can absolutely press the mismatch hunting bag. Bam has gotten better, even if it's just facing up, going to his jab series, and then sprinkling in jumpers. Tyler's comfortable taking jumpers against switches. And then you think about what Duncan's been able to do as a passer, you know, going back to like the early dribble handoff chemistry he's had with Bam. If you're just going to switch against Duncan and Bam, like, he's good enough to get, you know, slip those passes in against slips against switches. So, like, I think it's a benefit for Miami that you can even have this conversation to that point.
That's fair. That's all I wanted to hit on. Okay. We'll revisit the Heat soon. Don't you worry. We'll be back.
Got you. Run a little long on this one, so we will transition to the Mavs-Suns game to close. I'll just quickly note on Miami's front, I just really enjoyed their offensive flow in this one. And I got a good kick out of them just kind of spamming, all right, man, it's double drag or double pick and roll, depending on the pacing of it. Duncan Robinson, you were just slipping out of the first screen to the wing. Let's see what Philadelphia does with it. They just could not figure it out until it was too late. And even on the possession in which they switched everything and just kept the ball in front, Tyler Hill just drives and gets downhill. It's like, ah. So I had a lot of fun watching that action. So just a general kudos to Miami's offense in this one. We will have more on Miami soon. Let's close this thing out with the Dallas Mavericks beating the Phoenix Suns 128-114 in Phoenix, because the Mavs just can't help themselves. Luka Doncic, I think it starts and ends there. I think that's fair to say. 50 points, 6 boards, 15 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks, 7 stocks for Luka, in which he says, I got to at least be all defense second team. I don't know about that one, friend. However, I will say it once again on this podcast, I have enjoyed the defensive effort from Luka Doncic this year. I think it has certainly perked up for him. I certainly can't get to all defense, but it has been better. And I think the NBA watching community at large, and especially Mavericks fans, have been waiting for maybe not 7 stock Luka, but just consistent effort Luka with the size and smarts that he has. So that's been encouraging. But second player ever with 50 points and 15 assists is what I saw in a tweet. James Harden did so December 31st of 2016, in that 2016-2017 season. First player since Bernard King in 1984 to drop 50 on Christmas. So that was fun. Luka just ripped Phoenix to shreds, man. Before I even get into any of the other box score stuff, it was just a masterful effort for him. Phoenix tried the blitz, did not matter. Luka strung it out or just beat it anyway. You try to switch against him, he's having fun picking at matchups. You got to send help anywhere, and he's able to freeze the back line or freeze guys as he's going downhill. He's opening up lobs. Like, then he's sprinkling. He made 8 threes in the game as well. Like, there just was not an answer for him. Actually, I'll ask you a very quick question on the Luka front. Kind of independent of this game, but this game kind of highlights how unstoppable he is when he gets going. What is the best coverage?
There's none. That's the point. And I'm glad it took a 50-point game on Christmas for y'all to finally listen to what I've been trying to tell y'all for the last few years. He hits every scheme. I've literally said it on this pod. There's a YouTube breakdown on this very channel. If you're watching on YouTube, where you can click and talk about it, you can hear those words come from my mouth. That's what makes Luka very good. It shouldn't take 50 points on Christmas for y'all to figure it out. He can poke at all of your schemes. That's why Dallas is always in this spot. Phoenix tried to cycle through everything. That's the bit. Hey, you want to put 2 on the ball? Fantastic. I can see over. And I have a lob threat that I also trust on the short roll in Derek Lively. You want to play drop? I'm just going to engage the defense and hit you with a late lob or freeze your weak side help at any point in time and throw it to another defender. Hey, Phoenix, it's really cool you want to put Drew Eubanks on Derek Jones Jr. You also have guards that you don't want to guard me. So I'm going to go ahead and find ways to get matchups against them and put you in the same boat. And now if you have to show help or you want to double, I will find who's open. Also, I'll score. And I'll score enough to make you also just want to not have let me do anything defensively. Like, think about it. There's one play, I remember it distinctly. Phoenix had decided, hey, we're going to go ahead and just switch this. and we're going to go switch and double. The only problem is Derek Lively is so good at slipping out that you have to go over the screen. So you go two on the ball. Now you're running down there to switch. And now it's like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to come double and kick him out. You're running back up to double. And guess who's wide open? Derek Lively, because Luke has been looking at you the whole time, like, what are you doing, bud? Like, which way are you trying to go? What are you trying to attack? How are you trying to get going? Hey, you want to put two on the ball? That's fine. I can find the skip pass because you're going to have to help on this roll and we can play out of it. And that's the Luka's the starter for this Dallas team that understands where the shots are going to come from and what their roles are. You know, I don't even know if we're going to dive into it too much, but the starting lineup change. The production from Dante Exum, the production from Derrick Jones Jr., because, hey, this is what you have to do. Space the floor, knock down some shots, drive some closeouts. We have a formula for a player that works in this system next to Luka because of the pressure that he puts on teams.
That's the fun of it. Like, I don't think it, like, as you listed out, like, it's not, you're not reinventing the wheel. Like, make plays against tilted defenses. Knock down open shots when necessary, drive when you have to, move the ball if you don't have it. But because Luka draws so much attention, all those things hurt differently. Because you're allocating so much defensive capital to stopping Luka and slowing him down. It hurts when, like, you go back to, I think, the Laker game, and Dante Exum is just hitting threes all over the place. It's like, well, shoot, man. What are we supposed to do with this? Or you try to take away Luka, and here's Tim Hardaway Jr. bombing away from three. Or you put two to the ball. Yeah, surely a rookie center isn't going to hurt us. And now it's Derek Lively not only dunking on you, but now also making quick short roll reads. It's like, oh, not only is he doing that against us now, you zoom out, big picture. Holy crap, this rookie is getting reps in the short roll. And we're going to have to deal with Luka for however long he's here. We are now accelerating his favorite big man's growing process. If it looks like this in December, what are these short roll reads going to look like in March if we keep putting two to the ball on him? And then you factor Kyrie going to eventually be back. Oh, no. We got to worry about Luka and also Kyrie doing all the scoring / shooty things. And Tim Hardaway Jr. can knock down shots. And Dante Exum can pass and cut and drive. And he's also a very willing screener. So, like, even if we want to hide someone on him, he's very good at just feeding mismatches to Luka. And he can also do short roll things because he can see the floor well. Derrick Jones Jr. continues to hit threes. We will see, but he continues to hit threes. Dallas just ain't fun to deal with, like, conceptually. And if Luka's going to play like this, it ain't going to be 50 every night. But if he's going to play to this degree to where he can make every pass in the book, he will post you up. He can clear a side and just go to work. You put two to the ball. Again, you're just in trouble. He's going to continue to hit threes at this clip in efficiency. And also, if you foul him, he's also making free throws too. Shout out SJ. What do you do with this dude? Like, this is why it becomes so difficult to quit the Mavericks in this sense. Because, like, at the end of the day, they do still have this dude.
I'm going to raise my hand. I feel like you watched some defensive clips and you're like, all right, let me back up real quick. We can be honest there. You're right. I understand your point. But I feel like maybe I've done the pod with you too much. But I feel like in particular, you'd be like, man, Dallas, let me see something real quick.
Clips. Cause they just need the defense to be at a certain level, man. That's all they need.
That's the thing I wish people realized, man. Do you want to give the Suns a Christmas present and not talk about them?
I'm not that gracious. What are they doing? No, I'm I will just, like, there is entire, like, lineup construction / roster construction / I'm not even going to touch the KD stuff because, like, breaking at 11, great player is frustrated by team not playing great. I don't care about that being a point, just to be frank about it. I will ask, though, which is kind of loosely related to, like, the lineup roster construction bit. Are you at all worried about the shot profile of Devin Booker and KD? Like, them two together? Because we've talked a lot about like the benefits of how you can space those two alongside each other and make life easier for one another, et cetera, et cetera. As the injuries have happened and like the double teams have increased, it feels like that part has been hit. Cause like, all right, cool. It's a Devin Booker ISO. Kevin Durant's one pass away. You double Booker, you rotate the Kevin Durant, and then the next pass is Nasir Little. And it's like, oh, well, what does this mean exactly? And then just kind of going back to really what I wanted to hit on, the shot profile in particular, it's been very mid-range heavy for Devin Booker, which not the worst thing in the world because he's one of the best mid-range scorers on the planet. Like, he hasn't hit them at the same clip this year, so it feels worse. And even in this game in which Devin Booker wasn't a world beater offensively, Kevin Durant can hit shots, I think they combined for 7 3-point attempts. And that was where I was like, okay, wait. If your two best players and at minimum two of your three best shooters, because Grayson Allen just shot the letter off the ball, he's been shooting well all year long. But if your two best shooters aren't even getting shots up from behind the arc, like what does that do for your overall offense? It just further increases the threshold they have to hit as mid-range scorers and inside the arc scorers to really make that work, like from a math perspective. And so like, I was just wanting to quickly toss that to you. Like, is that just me galaxy braining it, or is that something worth monitoring? Like, what types of shots are being generated for them as opposed to them amplifying each other and helping everyone else?
I wouldn't say it's galaxy braining it. I just, for me, it's like, who's going to create the shots for them?
Yeah.
Unless it's Devin Booker gets two on the ball and you can get the swings to Kevin Durant, that's where it gets tricky. But we did see that when they played the Knicks, where it was like, okay, we're going to put two on the ball against Devin Booker. We're going to show help. Oh, that's right. KD gets the last swing from the three. And KD had like a stretch where he hit three or four in a row. So I'm not totally concerned. I think my issue for me is Devin Booker shooting 42% from mid-range on six attempts a night. Kevin Durant shooting 40% from mid-range on 7.2 attempts. That's not normally what they do. So now if they get back to making buckets in the mid-range, does it look different? Does it feel different? I don't think it changes what is going to happen for Phoenix, because I don't think a defense is like, yeah, we're totally fine with Devin Booker and KD shooting shots right now, at least. Mm-hmm. And I think they can make enough shots to make you feel like, okay, we need to change this up a little bit, or we don't believe in these guys. We're still going to send help and double. I think for me, for Phoenix, it's you've got to get your defense to a position to where it can be functional. And offensively, you've got to be able to continue to generate good looks. Not just threes, but hey, can we get some drives? Can we get back to cutting? Can we punish these defenses who are now, you know, still putting pressure on these guys? Like, they're always going to be guys who generate pressure from defenses. But if you're not able to take advantage of that consistently, how much value does that have? And now, are they going to force the issue with some of these shots? And I say force the issue, but they're not Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and that's not what they do.
They're like, worse things to
do. You know what I mean? Are they going to hunt a couple more that maybe they wouldn't have looked to get? And does that impact the offense even more?
Okay. I got you. I figured I'd float that one out there. As far as like a broader Phoenix conversation, like this team isn't healthy enough for me to, I guess that's also part of the point. Like that's the downside to, downside seems strong, but you know what I mean? Like that's the other side of the coin of making the Bradley Beal trade. Because you have now pushed all of your chips in. And if Bill isn't there, like you no longer have, it's whatever you have on your bench. And because of what KD's making, what Booker's making, what Bill is making, they send all the picks out the door, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, threshold, like it's not like they get this Adam mid-level exception guy. And so like, this is kind of the downside. You hope they stay healthy because otherwise you have to rely on everyone else. Like, I do think there's room for, you know, these guys have to step up in different roles. This is something that can help them in March, April, May. But it may just look funky right now. So, like, I think that's important to keep in mind for, like, the Phoenix Suns watchers in here. Like, it may not feel great now. These reps may matter as the team gets healthier. And now you can just count on these guys to fill in roles when they're in their more ideal roles versus what they're being asked to do right now. But as far as, like, broad Phoenix's done takes or KD's eventually going to act, like, I'm not there and I don't particularly have interest in having that conversation. I think that's way too far on December 26th. So. There's that. Quickly add the box score stuff since I just kind of stopped at Luka dropping 50 and 15, rightfully so. Derek Lively with 20 and 10. Derek Jones Jr. with 23 points, went 3 of 8 from 3. Tim Hardaway Jr. with 18 points. Devin Booker had 20 points and 10 assists, 5 of 10 inside the arc, 1 of 4 outside of it. Kevin Durant with 16, 8, and 7. Grayson Allen with 32 points. He went 8 of 17 from 3. And as Steve mentioned earlier in the pod, Chimezie Metu with 23 and 19 off the bench. Any closing thoughts for Suns Mavs before we head out of here?
No.
Okay. That'll do it. Pretty fun slate. I'll just say very quickly on the overall Christmas front, I'm glad that we didn't just have like a Christmas blowout at any point. Like, I do appreciate that all five games were at least reasonably competitive. We didn't have the pure, well, I guess it's time to open presents game. Or, well, let me get this this Christmas dinner prepared because someone's up 28 early in the third quarter, something like that. So I'm glad we didn't have that. We did just have like five solid basketball games and incredible performances in like all of them. So I just appreciate that as a basketball
fan. Hey, give about 5-7 years. You're going to appreciate them blowouts.
Oh, look, tended to the future little Nicky Dunks. Like, all right, yeah. Threshold, please. Okay. Anyway, we've gone longer than usual on this one, so I think we will save the free throws and get into some mailbag stuff on the next episode. Reminder that that was going to be audio only. Just the first episode every week, every Tuesday, is on the YouTube channel. So if you want to rock with us, head on over to the audio version. Thank you for listening to / watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Subscribe if you haven't already. Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And naturally, if you aren't subscribed to the JJ Reddy YouTube channel, do that. We are on every Tuesday, but naturally, this is JJ's channel. There's excellent basketball content throughout the channel, so check all that stuff out. Subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter, having fun discussions in there, sharing some tweets that we don't want to talk about on our normal timelines. But the real fun is in the Dunker Spot online watch parties. I cannot stress that enough. We are live basically every night, bouncing through the NBA slate. Live analysis. We're breaking down stuff during timeouts. If you have end of game nonsense, we got Steve talking through what he saw and why a play did or didn't work. And generally, this is also the place where we just let our hair down and we just have fun. And so if you want, aside from the basketball, just a good time to where you can make some jokes and talk about some nonsense elsewhere, it is a safe space for you. It is an inclusive community. Come rock with us. The link is going to be in the description. If it's hyperlinked, just click on that link into information. If you have a lead pass subscription, you're good to go. Lead pass and or cable subscription, you are good to go. Put your information in. It's free, no shenanigans. If it's not hyperlinked, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. Come have some fun with us, man. That's where the good stuff is. Or that's where more of the good stuff is, because I think we can talk some hoop. But come have some fun with us. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
My internet connection stopped working.